Kyle Sondland and Herbert Konings are founding partners of Security Token Group. All opinions expressed by them or guests on this podcast are solely their opinions and do not represent the views of Security Token Group or its subsidiaries. You should not take any opinion expressed on the show as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow any investment strategy. This podcast is for informational purposes only.
Hello, and thanks for tuning into the Security Token Show. I'm your host, Kyle Sondland, and with me is my co-host and business partner, Herwig Konings. We're coming to you from our studio in sunny Miami, Florida, and cannot wait to jump into today's show covering all things security tokens. But before we get into that, we need to thank our sponsor for episode 85. This episode of the Security Token Show is brought to you by this week's sponsor, Relio Technology Limited, a blockchain-enabled issuer, fund manager, and technology provider focused on eliminating the barriers to invest in, trade, and leverage exclusive real estate, private equity, and other real-world assets through decentralized finance, or DeFi. Relio's mission is to merge private equity with blockchain technologies and provide much broader global access to institutional-quality investment products that create long-term value and build wealth. The platform is driving adoption of security tokens both as an issuer and as a platform to enable other institutions to do the same. Relio has launched its own security token offering backed by equity in the business on top of a revenue share component to give investors exposure to the upside of the clients using the Relio platform. With three active funds currently in the pipeline, including a tokenized $250 million credit fund through a joint venture with Valentis Capital, the firm is poised to provide leading tokenization services for some of the largest funds in the industry. To learn more about Relio and the RST token, check out their white paper and pitch deck today at relio.fund. That's relio.fund. Check it out.
Thank you so much to our sponsor this week, Relio. And definitely go check them out at Relio.fund. I mean, if you're interested in learning more. So, and if you're new to the Security Token Show, each week we dive into the latest security token industry news. We'll tell you about the newest security token offerings and updates. And then we give you a breakdown of last week's trading activity in the secondary market. Finally, we'll finish off the show with our weekly main topic discussion, which this week is about tokenizing venture capital and what that means. But of course, we can't get started without first doing our Company of the Week awards, where we award two companies for making the biggest moves in the industry last week. So, who is your pick this week, Kyle, for episode 85?
Well, with my Company of the Week award this week, I am psyched to award it to the security token issuance platform known as Stalker. The firm has been incredibly successful in landing clients, headlining with high-profile security token Infinite Fleet, and most recently with the exotic car manufacturer Mazanti. The firm projects that they will facilitate tokenization for over $120 million in assets in just the first quarter of 2021. Ooh. But the firm wins my Company of the Week because on top of that success that they've had, the firm just announced the closure of a new funding round, raising over $4.6 million to scale its platform to meet demand for compliant security token offerings. This is absolutely amazing news. Stalker has been one of the most active platforms, and I've spoken with co-founder Arnab Naskar many times and love the direction that he's taking with the firm. The investment was led by previous lead iFinex, which I believe is the investment form of Bitfinex, alongside G1 Ventures and Utopia Genesis Foundation. This is absolutely amazing news, and I cannot wait to see what the firm is able to do with all these additional resources, considering they've already done so much. So it's exciting to see what they're about to do. Congratulations to Stalker. That is S-T-O-K-R. You can check that out at stalker.io.
That's an amazing choice. Love to see more and more infrastructure companies raising money. $120 million in facilitated deals in the first quarter. Sounds like Arnav and his team at Stalker, nothing's going to stop them from now on. They're going to keep on going.
Absolutely not. And who'd you pick, Roy?
Well, I'm picking the 31st largest blockchain by coin value, according to CoinMarketCap. I'm referring to NEM, N-E-M blockchain, which yesterday launched a symbol platform for security tokens and DeFi. So their platform enables the use of what they call mosaics, but they're essentially smart contracts-based representations of ownership in real-world assets and securities with the compliance layered in. And of the hundreds of blockchains that have launched, few have actually gone out and loudly into the security token space. So Symbol by NEM seems to be their solution to bridging finance and blockchain. And I'm completely here for it, since they've built a large community and a value of over $6 billion in market cap through their NEM token. So They're clearly going after the security tokens with the launch of Symbol, and they've even partnered with Digital Markets, who worked with us to list the CEO tokens on Merge. So they're getting all the right pieces in place to bring the platform the full value proposition of security tokens. And I'm excited to see the renewed attention brought towards security tokens thanks to this move. And I'm excited to see what issuers jump on using this new platform as well. I'm sure there will be many announcements of that coming in the next few weeks. So meanwhile, I want to spotlight their good work for their launch, which is why they win my company of the week.
That's really exciting. It's interesting. The blockchains continue to develop and build. I mean, competition's coming. Ethereum obviously is the one that people have been building on most commonly, but this Symbol blockchain seems to be working with all the right partners, and they certainly are well capitalized behind it. So it's only a matter of time, I think, before we start to see more token issuances from other blockchains, and really to see which one comes out on top is going to be very interesting.
As we discussed in last week's episode about investors caring about the blockchain, there might be a good question about issuers caring about that too. Ethereum's getting lots of scrutiny these days about the high transaction fees. So it's great to see renewed competitive interest from other blockchains.
Awesome work from them.
Now let's get into the news. But before I do, I want you all to know that all the articles we cover on this show, they're sourced from stomarket.com/news. And they're also available for reference in the about description of the podcast itself from wherever you're listening to. Or if not, you can always go to the Security Token Show Medium blog whenever you want to read any of these news articles there for yourself. So kicking things off this week is India, which recently introduced a bill to make owning cryptocurrency in the country illegal. It would criminalize trading, mining, issuing, transferring, or possessing cryptocurrency, and potentially be punishable for up to 10 years in jail. So according to a Reuters source, anyone owning crypto will have 6 months to liquidate after the bill is passed, which apparently is said to be highly likely. This would be one of the most recent and largest crackdowns on crypto today. And over in the U.S., according to CoinGeek.com, a bill that seeks to exclude digital currencies from being defined as securities has been reintroduced in Congress. So the Token Taxonomy Act would exempt swaps between digital currencies from taxation, as well as change the tax structure for digital currencies in an individual retirement account. So the bill was first introduced in 2018 and will now be the third time that it's been introduced to Congress after more minor tweaks that hopefully will get it to pass. The bill has been endorsed by the Blockchain Association, which is a nonpartisan organization that promotes positive public policy for the industry, as well as provides criticism in the past of the SEC's handling of the industry. So the bill is ultimately expected to help the U.S. in becoming more competitive with international jurisdictions that are, of course, becoming increasingly more crypto-friendly by modernizing the tax laws for digital assets. So in relation to security tokens, the bill clarifies tokens under this standard would be required to not represent an interest in a company or an investment contract. So security tokens would still fall under the same capital gain laws that, they currently sit under. And now, what we've got to get to is what we've called the SEC case of the year with Ripple. And if you didn't know, the SEC is suing the firm behind the now seventh largest cryptocurrency by market cap at the time of production here. Since the potential classification of XRP, the token from Ripple, as an investment contract, the value of XRP has dramatically diminished. And now XRP holders claim their interests aren't being represented by the SEC and they want to enter the case as third-party defendants. So on Sunday, a motion to intervene was filed by John Deaton of Deaton Law Firm on behalf of over 6,000 XRP holders. Deaton himself, as an XRP holder, argued that the interests of token holders were not being adequately represented in the securities lawsuit against Ripple Labs and its executives. Deaton's website, Crypto Law, on Sunday, also said that they have over $15 billion in losses for the XRP holders immediately following the SEC's announcement of its lawsuit against Ripple Labs. So in 2 weeks there, following the commencement of the lawsuit, XRP's price sunk 76% from 76 cents down to 18 cents. So a falling token price was triggered in part by the decision of a major cryptocurrency exchange to delist XRP in the wake of this lawsuit. This includes exchanges like Binance, eToro, Coinbase, Bitrex, OKCoin. They all removed XRP as a result. And investment services such as Grayscale also liquidated their XRP holdings, choosing to convert them into Bitcoin, Bitcoin Cash, and Litecoin. And to make things worse for the SEC, a Forbes article by Roslyn Layton lays out why the SEC's case is shaky to begin with, citing that they don't want to share certain certain internal information with Ripple over the 7-year period that they were under investigation for all this, as well as the fact that they tried to dismiss John Deaton's case because they said currently that there is no determination of whether XRP is a security or not. This means that the SEC openly tried to dismiss using the tactic that they may be wrong about XRP being a security in the first place. So that doesn't really portray confidence in their actual case against the firm. And we'll, of course, continue to watch this closely given the ramification potential for the crypto industry from this case in general. And meanwhile, to top it all off, Congressman Patrick McHenry has introduced a bill that would have the SEC and CFTC put together a public-private working group to develop a framework for all digital assets. So this would be big news, given the same politician was behind a lot of the great work with the Jobs Act in 2012, and also is a huge voice for modernizing capital markets using fintech. So hopefully he can get the job done. And in Hong Kong, actually in Hong Kong first, OSL Digital Securities Limited, the world's only SFC-licensed Big Four audited digital asset platform and member of the BC Technology Group, announced its official go-live with the execution of the first customer trades via its licensed trading desk. So OSLDS, they hold a license for Type 1 and Type 7 regulated activities related to virtual assets that were created by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission, that's the SFC, the SEC equivalent. And the OSL platform utilizes a modular interface where institutional and professional investors can go ahead and buy and securely store digital assets, including Bitcoin, Ethereum, and they say supposedly selected security tokens. So the go live for trading follows an exhaustive and successful trial use period completed with the participation of trading partners and investors already. So OSL customers will benefit from one single platform to manage all of their trading on the blockchain. So unique in the market because the OSL exchange is fully compliant with all of these new rules. And as they said, one of the first to be able to trade in Hong Kong. And moving over into more company announcements, nearby neighboring Japanese Nomura Holdings, one of Japan's leading financial services companies, has announced the opening of a division to focus on providing support to public and private companies. So the division will focus on helping them raise capital through what they say are non-traditional means, which of course includes security tokens. So the division will be up and running April 1st, they say, and is just another positive step, of course, towards Japan's digital asset ecosystem as well as the world's. Nomura already has been active in the space in the past, such as helping, you know, form the Japan STO Association last year, as well as launching their issuance platform, Boostree, which also received investment from Japanese investment bank SBI. And to keep things going in Asia, over in Singapore, InvestaX, a leading digital securities finance and investment platform for real estate and private equity there, launched what they are saying is the world's first digital SPAC. So launching a digital SPAC will allow them, they say, to bring greater openness, velocity, interoperability, and global distribution. And I'd say it would probably be exciting to watch how all this plays out. You know, it's yet another positive use case for security tokens in the financial world. And Sol Capital founder Billy So will be using the technology in this historic first for his SPAC. So we'll share more information about that deal when there's more to share. And moving back west to New York, we have Capital Engine, a financial services firm who's developing their very own DeFi protocol on Ethereum. So, quote, Capital Engine plans to simplify the process of launching DeFi products, effectively recreating the traditional financial system in markets such as lending, borrowing, and the buying and selling of securities. All can be done through a decentralized network. So competition is heating up, people. This is getting exciting. DeFi and security tokens are bound to intersect, and Capital Engine is set out to make that happen. So now I will say it's unclear what exact DeFi benefits one receives on this platform. And of course, Ethereum, again, has been growing criticism for all of the fees from the security token industry. So we'll see how this move on Ethereum pans out for the firm. And we are back with another content piece by Peter Gaffney for his weekly series, Tokenize This, where he discusses a unique use case for security tokens every week. And this time he discussed the possibility of capitalizing on client contracts for liquidity solutions. So in essence, you know, money more valuable being now or later. So similar to how Spencer Dinwiddie tokenized his NBA contract, Spencer knew that having money in his pocket now rather than years later was more valuable to him. So as Peter alluded to, companies can do this by selling the rights to the revenue of a contract with a client to investors for upfront money. A fascinating use case once again, I think. Check it out on Medium. And I'm sure you have heard the craze, of course, around NFTs in the past months. You know, as Timothy Collins states, it would be a mistake to dismiss the NFT market just because you don't understand it. So I tend to agree with that sentiment. The industry is booming and people are buying digital art for millions. So I think this is the beginning of the future for all collectibles, certainly in some different innovation there. I expect this craze to continue growing. And if you want to understand more of these fundamentals, this article might be a good starting point. And that's the full rundown of the industry news from last week for you incredible listeners. Kyle, what industry webinars we got coming up?
Well, we had another incredibly successful Clubhouse conversation last week. As a reminder, we do Clubhouse sessions every Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern, discussing this podcast and hosting a breakout session with thought leaders and industry experts to break down the industry in even more detail. On top of that, we actually host a Q&A session, which gives listeners an opportunity to ask the panelists questions that they may have on the topic or on the industry. Led by our fantastic moderator, Keith Smith, the conversation is always incredibly engaging and a lot of fun. So check that out on Clubhouse on Thursdays at 5 p.m. EST. You never know who's going to turn up. And our next event this week is a keynote chat with Viktor Viktorov, who will give an introductory lecture on real estate tokenization and what his company does in the space. Reyno offers real estate tokenization as a service, lending backed by tokenized real estate with loans sizes up to $50 million, as well as a crowdfunding platform for tokenized assets. Reyno, that is R-E-I-N-N-O, is the first company in the world to use tokenized real estate as loan collateral. If you want to hear more about Reyno and the security token industry, specifically focusing on real estate, tune in tonight as of posting Tuesday, March 16th at 6:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. Eastern. And next up is an event hosted by the Chamber of Digital Commerce, which hosts T0, ARCA, and the Georgetown University's Center for Financial Markets and Policy at the McDonough School of Business for an exciting discussion surrounding the landscape for digital assets and infrastructure. It's going to be a very interesting discussion featuring leaders from T0 and ARCA alongside a very educated academic leaders and in the panel. So the panel will be on March 25th at 12 p.m. Eastern, so reserve your place now. And as a reminder, next week is also the Security Token Summit hosted by Draper Goren Holm. It will be live streamed on securities.io and will feature a variety of themes such as compliance, liquidity, derivatives, secondary markets, regulation, custody, interoperability, and much more. Headlining speakers will include SEC Commissioner Hester Pierce alongside many great security token innovators, including Luke Fallonpin from Tokeny, Michael Pincus from Bitbond, among others. And it also includes Herwig and me. So we're both going to be speaking there, and we would love to see you all there. The event is free, and you can sign up now in the link in the description. And that's all for the events and webinars that we have for this week and next. Remember, you can submit any news or events on stomarket.com/news so that we can cover it on the show the following week.
Thanks for that, Kyle. I'm looking forward to the Security Token Summit and some of these other events. But meanwhile, what do you got on the latest security token offering updates?
Our first update on the security token offering side comes from Science Blockchain, one of the first blockchain-based investment funds that tokenized their LP shares, who they just announced a successful token upgrade and reissuance. The firm originally self-issued their tokens years ago, but soon realized there were compliance upgrades that the token needed in order to work properly in the current regulatory environment. In addition to the compliance integration, the new upgraded tokens will allow for full distributions to be paid following the portfolio's liquidity events, which is a significant benefit when compared to the traditional model, which, like Blockchain Capital's original model, will include a token burn instead of those direct distributions. We're going to be covering that a whole lot more in our main topic, so get excited for that. That being said, if you own any SCI tokens, Science Blockchain LP interest tokens, you need to upgrade those to the SCI2 tokens, so visit science.securitize.io to take care of that. Then moving on to some new STOs, we have Ignium.io, which is a security token issuance and settlement platform based in Estonia, and they are today announcing the launch of a 10 million euro bond token program with Viking Commodities Capital. Viking Trading is another Estonia-based firm that trades grain, that is grain, the commodity, internationally, and they will be the first recipient of the fund. According to the announcement of the issuance, VCC, that is, as I said, Viking Commodities Capital, bond tokens reportedly act as, quote, short-term, high-yield, asset-backed, fixed-income products to global investors. So we had a bunch of terms in there and definitely take them all down. The release continued saying, quote, capital markets are in shortage of six-month bonds with a 10% per annum coupon rate. These are the kinds of bonds that are provided by VCC through Ignium, end quote. So it's a fantastic use case and one we'll be monitoring as it moves forward in the process. Labs Group, in collaboration with Rio DeFi, is also launching a real estate security token. The firm announced an initial offering launch directly onto Uniswap via an initial exchange offering that's going on this as of Monday. So after this podcast is launched, this will be live. This is from Labs Group launching with Rio DeFi, which is a blockchain issuance provider. The firm is also launching a security token giveaway, resulting in a grand prize winner to win a 5-star seaside property on Phuket. On Phuket Island in Thailand. So according to the official announcement, the winner is going to receive 100% of this 5-star property via a security token that they can trade on the secondary market. The property also includes a 6% rental guarantee for 2 years, according to Labs Group. So the press release honestly was a little bit confusing because they were talking about this initial offering going on Uniswap about a security token. Then they were also mentioning this giveaway, and 100% of this giveaway is in a property. I was not really able to keep track of which properties they were really referring to. But however, 6% in rental dividends, I'm sure there's going to be an interested buyer for this on the secondary market. You can value what that should be worth via a DCF analysis. I don't really have any other terms of the deal, but I will keep you posted moving forward. We also have a very interesting new token offering that was shared with me by Nisa Moyles, who is an investor through A100X Ventures and a security attorney herself, regarding something that is called being called a real estate NFT. Now, if you're unfamiliar with the term NFT, it stands for non-fungible token, and we covered a full episode on these assets on episode 81 of the podcast. In any event, NFTs are not currently being sold as securities despite the gray area of the asset, and I think that this one maybe pushes the envelope just a little bit too far. In this listing for a real estate NFT on the Mintable platform, this seller is offering 50% ownership of a rental property in St. Louis, Missouri via an NFT. They're doing it exactly the same as, you know, as we've seen with the realty properties, as according to the description of the listing, quote, "For ownership, we will create an LLC together and place the rental into the new LLC, showing 50-50 ownership between you and I. This is a practice I have completed 100 times. Easy process. Let's make history together with the first ever NFT for real estate," end quote. The advert also notes a $1,200 per month rental income that presumably will be split 50-50 between the issuer and the investor. So with an appraised value of the property at $138,000, the issuer is seeking nearly $77,000 for 50% of the property, which is actually over half of the appraised value, so for the share of the property. So they're actually trying to get a little bit more. And on top of that, they actually want 5% royalties on all secondary trades of these property shares. So now, I'm not a lawyer, but this does seem like a little bit of a overvalued offering to me, maybe a little scammy. Not only is it an investment that, to my knowledge, follows no securities laws and therefore is absolutely not compliant with existing regulations, but it's also a bad deal. At $600 a month in rent, you'd actually need to collect rent for about 10 years to even cover your upfront costs. And in addition to that, the 5% royalty makes absolutely no sense for a real estate investor, which is just icing on the cake here. So I don't really want to come off too negative, but it does seem like this is the absolute wrong way to approach a real estate tokenization deal. And this is something that I really have to warn our listeners to avoid. If you're interested in tokenized real estate, I would absolutely recommend that you do your research on many of the legitimate real estate tokenization firms that have launched, including Realty, Rentalty, Vertala Real Estate, and many more. There are others as well, but it really all boils down to making sure that you do your own research and you protect yourself, because just because you can invest in something doesn't mean you should. Herwig, I'm sure you have some thoughts on this one as well. Would love to hear what you're thinking.
Yeah, I remember checking this one out, and you know, I was thinking this is bound to happen, Kyle. You know, we'll see many more of these, I expect, just like we did with ICOs. There was also, you know, blatant illegal activity there. Unfortunately, the barrier to doing this, it's so low and it's such a small offering that I actually think this is hardly going to be seen as worth the SEC's time to enforce. But you're absolutely right. You know, this NFT is also a security token by every definition, and the platform hosting it itself is put at serious risk. It allows, you know, more of the same without enforcing and layering in the, you know, necessarily compliance requirements to support this. So still, I do see this as kind of a good thing. This is why I always say Bitcoin growing in demand and blockchain innovation in general, like ICOs and DeFi and NFTs, you know, they're all a good thing for security tokens. You know, they're putting attention to real estate security tokens, and I think that's awesome. Now they're going to learn the hard way that they got to do it the right way.
I totally agree. Good exposure. Does show there's demand for tokenized real estate, as we've been able to see here for a while. But again, investor or buyer beware on this one. I would stay away. And finally, Swiss company UGPay Group launched a sale of a security token under the ticker WCRU, which are backed by assets in real economy sectors that are under management by the financial group. Every investor that buys the WCRU token becomes a co-owner of the global investment portfolio that covers 20 industry sectors, including gold mining, synthetic diamond production, real estate, innovative transport, telecom, basalt fiber production, as well as cryptocurrencies and other assets. According to the press release, the firm has raised nearly $4 million in less than 3 weeks via a Reg D506C offering, which is very exciting. The WCRU tokens are issued on the Crypto Unit blockchain, which is a new one for me, and which also allows for token holders to execute voting rights on profit distribution decisions that involve paying out dividends. The one kind of head-scratching thing here is that they mentioned that from 12% to 35% of profits from assets under management will be distributed in the form of dividends. So I'm not really sure how they decide on that range. It certainly seems like a very wide range in terms of what you might make on these dividends. And it also is interesting that the voting rights decide how much they pay. So, I mean, isn't it in the investor's best interest to pay out more dividends? I'm not exactly sure, but certainly something to look into. In addition, to eliminate risk of a token sell-off and like a mass dump once the lockup period ends after 12 months, they actually are issuing a further drip out campaign. And so after that 1 year lockup period, 1% of the token supply each month will be unfrozen and allowed to trade freely. I'm not sure if this means that 1% of every person's holding will be distributed each month, which seems, you know, like a little bit crazy, or if it's 1% of different things. But again, 1% of supply per month, that means 120 months you're going to have before, something like that, in terms of all this stuff getting live. So, very interesting stuff here. I think we'll have to evaluate the plan as it comes to fruition. Nevertheless, congrats to the UGPay team for a successful raise. I think they're still raising now. You can check that out if you're interested. And then moving into our market trading segment, our market cap was up 10% from last week to $586 million. However, the glaring issue in the current market is a real lack of liquidity. We haven't really seen any new tokens list in the last quarter, and despite all the promises of the technology, the secondary market is looking relatively dire right now. Realty properties are not trading nearly as much as they were 6 months ago. Most of the open finance and merge assets hardly trade at all. It just seems like a very apathetic market sentiment right now, and we need some of these promising issuance platforms and marketplaces to help drive adoption by bringing some fresh assets for investors to get involved with. The market was up this week, driven by the success of the T0 asset, which is close to that $7 mark, which is exciting. Again, it's really never stayed above $8 for very long. $10 is that mark you're trying to get to if you're a initial offering investor to reach the initial investment mark. But aside from that, also Overstock was successful, as it has been. But other than that, really, we haven't seen much across the board. Here's hoping that that will change in the coming weeks. I definitely think this market needs a little bit of breath of fresh air and an injection of life to get things kickstarted for 2021.
Yeah, there's a lot going on right now, Kyle, that's for sure. And it does seem like security tokens, they have a window of opportunity to ride on all this hype that's going on. We know T0 has got a lot of partnerships in place, and there's a few upcoming listings that we heard about, though we don't know when. And we know many new marketplaces like Securitize and Archax, they've been approved. So hopefully some listings more from them as well. And I know a few more listings are coming to international exchanges like Merge. So it feels like a lot of drip, 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 and then, you know, a waterfall feeling will come into effect. And you know what they say, when it rains, it pours. So here's hoping.
We can only hope so. But in the meanwhile, let's take our time here to discuss one of security tokens' implications on a specific asset class, one that has historically been one of the most lucrative in the world and most coveted to get access to. I'm talking, of course, about the venture capital asset class.
Yeah, I think many of our listeners are familiar with venture capital, but I do think it's important, of course, that we give a background and an overview of this typical structure just in case they aren't.
I think that's a great idea, Herwig. How about you take us to school?
Okay, let's buckle up because we're going to travel back in time. You know, really not that far, actually, because venture capital is also seen as one of the newest asset classes in the world. So it really only emerged as a concept and business in the 1970s, only 50 years ago, people. So it was, of course, made prolific by the incredible returns created by the early VCs of Silicon Valley, which invested in semiconductors and chip technology, which of course flourished under the hardware and computer revolution. So the model was born and proven. You know, invest in companies early that have big potential and reap the rewards when they go public, which many VCs did during the 1990s dot-com bubble. And this success drove others with money to seek out the same returns.
Now, the model itself wasn't as simple as finding and investing in early stage companies. Typically, it involved an investment manager known as a general partner of the venture capital fund who has experience in the specific industry and some financial knowledge in order to be able to source, identify, and invest in the right opportunities. Interestingly enough, the success of the individual investments was extremely low, with a few companies out of 10 or 20 resulting in all the earnings, returning all the earnings. In fact, it was so low that for many VCs, it was difficult to reach the same level of returns if they get a home run, which is why really only a dozen a few dozen VC firms or so actually run the industry today. It's because all of the dollars want to be placed with them since they have proven that they are investors in an asset class that is so young and they're successful at it.
Right, so let's dive a little further in that model a bit. You know, the general partner, or many times, you know, several partners, they're essentially the CEO of the fund, right? The same implication. They are the visionary that runs the business of finding and investing in private high growth companies and who the investors are essentially backing. The fund, which needs money for the general partner to deploy, raises money from investors known as limited partners or LPs. So historically, and this fundamentally hasn't really changed, the business model has been the same for all venture capitalists. They charge 2% per year as an asset management fee, and then they charge 20% of the gains. This changes with the first-time fund managers or with proven experienced fund managers sometimes, but ultimately that value comes from, you know, the fund's ability to create returns. So the important thing to take away from this is that a limited partners, the investors are typically investing in something where they will pay a small fee annually until they get their proceeds, typically towards the end of the fund. And since it can take sometimes between 8 to 10 years to invest, grow, and then IPO or sell a portfolio company, most LPs recognize venture capital as a long-term investment. And on top of that, since there is no marketplace for venture capital funds and funds are actually kept as private companies, investors have also recognized this as an illiquid asset class.
So what you're saying is that most limited partners investing in venture capital funds are aware that they may not see the returns for almost 10 years, and that they won't actually be able to easily trade or sell these interests in that time period.
That's exactly right. And our listeners who understand security tokens are probably already connecting the dots that the security tokens can obviously massively disrupt venture capital as an asset class.
Yeah, I think we can get into the implications now that everyone listening understands the asset class. So there are more complicated things we could get into, like managing capital calls by GPs who don't need to collect $100 million up front from LPs. We're getting into the waterfall payout structures and all that kind of stuff. So we're going to dig into that in a little bit. But first, let's start with one of the structures that we just talked about. And that's liquidity. So simply due to this factor alone, many investors shy away from this asset class. Other asset classes like real estate and similar funds like private equity also have long hold times, so it's not unusual. But the reality is that you need risk appetite and capital to consider making an investment into a venture capital fund. If a security token could create access to liquidity for LPs, more investors may consider participating due to the diminished risk presented by the illiquidity.
And I think that leads into access, you know, which is another big problem. Getting access as an investor to a VC firm is very difficult. Doesn't matter who you are. Similarly, the way VCs need to source diligence and identify portfolio investment opportunities, LPs need to do the same with VCs. However, venture capital has already notoriously been difficult to access for capital as an entrepreneur. And as a fund manager, it's even more difficult to find LPs. Now, of course, with a website and crowdfunding technology, anyone, regardless of their wealth or access, could potentially learn about and invest into a venture capital fund and get equal exposure just like everybody else.
And more access and interest from investors means more capital flowing into ventures, which means more dollars flowing into startups ready to change and transform the world. You can make an argument that security tokens are actually accelerating innovation as a result of this.
You absolutely can make that argument, Kyle, and it will also bring a lot of new types of investors to help take advantage of this huge price disparity that exists between early stage private startups, you know, up until they IPO on a public market. Hedge funds and PE funds could also start trading and participating in this asset class more actively. As we mentioned, retail investors and high net worth individuals can start to access and play in this asset class, you know. And before getting direct exposure to this was nearly impossible. So maybe you can tell our listeners about, you know, also some of the direct and indirect economic rights for venture capital as a result of security tokens, Kyle.
Absolutely. So now in the traditional venture economic models, you traditionally see some sort of waterfall structure where different tiers of capital are paid out as the fund returns capital. Essentially, the distribution waterfall would determine the order in which the returns are paid out. And while the waterfall can vary depending on the fund and the investor rights, there tend to be those four categories. The first and foremost is actually returning the initial capital, where the initial distributions would go right back to the investors to pay for their initial investment into the fund. Once they've been paid back their initial investment, they'd also receive 100% of the returns until they receive the preferred return on their investment. This is something that usually they target at the beginning. That was what they were pitching to the investors to begin with. Usually, the preferred rate of return for this tier is probably approximately 7 to 9%, something in that range. From there, the additional gains will go to the GPs and the sponsor of the fund until they reach their target percentage return. And then finally, if there's anything left, it can then be distributed between the different parties depending on their agreed upon rates.
Yeah, so this is a standard payout for a venture fund. And as you can see, listeners, even just distributing this payout to many different shareholders is a process that could tremendously benefit from leveraging smart contracts and security tokens. Essentially, you'd be able to cut out the middleman from this process, resulting, of course, in much quicker payouts, less fees, more accurate and transparent reporting, things like that. So you could code the agreed rules, for example, into the smart contract and have this process essentially auto-execute for investors in real time as proceeds are distributed.
That's totally right. And it's also interesting to look at the current tokenized venture funds to consider their structures to see if there's anything that we can learn as well.
That's right. We got a bunch of tokenized venture funds already out there. We got Blockchain Capital, Spice VC, Science Blockchain that you covered earlier in this episode.
Yeah, we also have MinerVest in Africa and Andra Capital, as well as many others around the world. But you bring up great examples to use in the case of Blockchain Capital and Science Blockchain, Herwig, which actually have both been reissued as their tokens to, you know, to address some of those early concerns around distribution payouts. You see, back in the wild west of the blockchain era, back in 2013 to 2017, there was hardly any clarity on these assets, and both Blockchain Capital and Science Blockchain were innovators in this space, seeking to tokenize their funds to raise capital but allow for trading of these LP shares. However, they did not follow the security token route and launched what were essentially compliant ICOs that did not represent any underlying rights to the fund. Instead, they pioneered the indirect economic rights model. In this model, the fund would use each liquidity event to buy back those trading shares of the fund and remove them from circulation. In this scenario, they would be reducing the supply of the shares and, in theory, would be increasing the price because the demand would stay the same. In this way, they could generate returns for their investors while not offering direct exposure to the fund's portfolio.
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely another great example of a new way for VCs to create indirect exposure to their fund using security tokens, because this buyback model normally would simply not be seen as a best practice in the VC world.
But despite this early model, we've come a long way since then. And both funds have decided to scrap that model and the self-issuance process. And now they work with Securitize as an issuance platform. Now, these tokens are structured as direct economic rights vehicles, which give investors that direct access to the fund's returns on its portfolio. I'm not totally sure on the exact waterfall structure for the assets at this time, because that information is not publicly disclosed. But presumably, the dividends are paid to investors as the firm has liquidity events paid directly to their wallets through Securitize's platform. That's why it's so important, as I mentioned before, to upgrade your shares as the Science Blockchain investor, because you will not be entitled to those direct returns with the prior SCI token. You need to actually upgrade it and get rid of those original tokens you had to get those new ones to claim your rightful ownership of the fund.
Yeah, and this model makes so much more sense and is simpler than this kind of weird workaround. Again, stick to best practices, right?
So with security tokens and smart contracts, we make that distribution process so much more efficient, but it also allows us to embrace securities laws by providing investors with the proper protections and rights that they are entitled to. That's what's important about security tokens versus other tokenized vehicles. In other models, issuers are trying to remove any of the underlying asset from the investment vehicle, which in turn strips investors of any of the value that they're actually paying for. It doesn't make sense as an investor to have to rely on hype cycles and the fear of missing out just as your only way to make money on an investment. If you're investing in an early stage product, whether it's a company, a fund, or something totally different, you should absolutely have some stake in the future success of the company or fund. And with the ease of security tokens, we can make that possible for investors and assets all around the world. It's actually very exciting to think about the opportunities presented by security tokens, and venture capital funds are not unlike the rest. But that's about it from me on the topic of tokenized VCs. Is there anything else from you, Harvey?
Nope. I think we can call it a wrap. So thanks so much, everyone, for listening. Please send in any questions or feedback to us on Twitter or LinkedIn. And be sure to get the latest trading data and news at stomarket.com. And if you are on Clubhouse, join us this Thursday at 5 p.m. for the breakdown of the show like we do every week. And if not, I'll catch y'all next week on Tuesday for episode 86.
Thanks so much for listening.